November 21st, 1978. My name is Sandy Shaw, and I am now interviewing Ms. Ruth Curry Lawrence for the Castroville Public Library. The first public electric and water work here in Castroville, and the history of Landmark Inn. Okay, Miss Ruth, where were you born?
I was born in New Orleans, Louisiana.
And what year was that?
And that was in 1900, so I go with the century.
Century.
Oh. I can easily
remember how old you are. Why, that's a help. Okay, what was your father's name?
He had several first names. Henry Thomas Townsend Walker Lawler, because his father didn't want to offend any of his friends, and he was born in Ireland, and they had, I suppose, many godfathers, probably.
And that was all important to be
about his long name, but he didn't use it.
Uh-huh.
He just used Henry T. Lawler and the T. was Thomas.
When he finally got down to it, huh?
Yeah.
Well, what year was he born? What was his birthday?
It was August. I should have missed that. That's before I met.
What about?
He died in Bryan, Texas in 1924, and he was 80.
So you could kind of track and figure out when he was.
I'm sorry.
Well, that's all right. We can figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
And how about your mother's name?
Her name is Carrie Mary Acock.
And how do you spell that Acock?
A-Y-C-O-C-K.
And where was she
born? She was born in New Orleans. Uh-huh. And she was only 18 when she married. And my father always teased her and said she was so late to get to the wedding that he thought she
changed her mind.
Because she was quite a bit older than
she was.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what possessed him to come over here from Ireland?
Well, he came with his family.
Oh, his family came.
And they were, I guess you call them rebels. And they got out of Ireland and went to Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And he decided that he'd never get anywhere in Pennsylvania, in the coal mine district.
Mm-hmm.
And so he ran away twice. One time they got him back.
From his home, from his parents, he ran away.
And the second time he ran away, he went to his aunt. He lived in New York. And he took him in hand and he stayed with them. And eventually he got to New Orleans. And the way he started his, I guess you could call it crossing, because he really acquired quite a bit of competence. Flour was in barrels, and wooden barrels were shipped that way instead of in sacks. And these barrels fell into the river, and they rescued them, but they didn't think they were worth anything. And he was smart enough to know that it would form a paste around the outer edge, and that the inside would be good. So he got them to pack it in nothing, and then scooped out all the good flour and sold it at a premium. And that was his start.
That was his beginning.
Yes.
Well, was he a merchant then?
Yes.
Merchant.
What was known as a commission merchant. He sold grain and flour. And not only in Louisiana, but he even shipped flour to Cuba. And he ran a blockade during the Civil War from New Orleans to Mobile, and they were captured. And the commander of the Yankees got on board ship and said, "Who is in charge of this ship?" No one would answer. And so he made them line up and turn their hands up so he could feel them. And he felt my father's hands, and he had no calluses, so he knew that he wasn't one of them. So he took him and he put him in jail. And this really is interesting. And he was put in jail in Mobile. And the general who came to interviewing me. His name was Lawler. That's the same way and everything. And he said, now, you know, if you won't swear allegiance to the United States, this could be, they could shock them. You know,
right, you were
considered a...
Traitor.
So he said that he was really born in Ireland. He didn't believe in slavery, and he didn't think it was wrong for him to just say, I will not do anything against the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So the general excused him, let him go back to New Orleans, and gave him a pass so he could go to the camp where the Yankees had set up camp, and he sold produce to them.
To them.
So it's really something.
So that is a
good,
yes.
Mm-hmm. And years after, when the youth died, he went to a 4th of July entertainment and sat next to this old general in prison
together
in Mobile. So that makes a
makes
story.
Makes it a story. Well, why did he go to Bryan then?
Well, they built a huge six-story reinforced concrete building, which was a flour mill, right
mm-hmm.
on the river. And
this was in New Orleans?
In New Orleans,
mm-hmm.
yes, about 1907.
Mm-hmm.
And they waited until he finished it and had it all set up and all the machinery bought to run the mill.
Mm-hmm.
And then they... His levy board. They had it in foreign politics.
Oh, yes. And especially if they got somebody to get their head.
Right, that was it exactly.
That was the thing.
They said, well, this has to be condemned. And they tore that down and tore the beautiful house that we lived in. What we live in now is a barn compared to marble mantles, beautiful stairway, and the three stories.
And they tore it down with this mill.
So we had this huge diesel engine. I guess it was as big almost as this library. It was a diesel bush, the builder of it, and how to do it. And a strange coincidence, somebody was asking, how did you come to capture and I told him about that we had to go somewhere with this huge engine. And he said, was it a diesel engine? I said, yes. Was it in Bryan? I said, yes. In 1924, it was sold? Yes. And lo and behold, it's now in San Antonio. And I don't know
what your dad had brought it from New Orleans
to Bryan.
Mm-hmm. When y'all
and
left
then
there.
And then when we... That's fine. Somebody came. Someone from San Antonio bought it. Because they got used to it. So that's the story.
Well, I was just going to say, we haven't even touched on you yet. We're still, your dad sounds pretty fascinating. Well, he was a real businessman then, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Very much so.
And what you call liberal.
A liberal.
Today.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and
well,
what did your mother think of him as all of this? Did she go along with him and everything?
You know, I think we didn't realize what a brave little somebody she was.
She really was.
To come to Texas from New Orleans, where all of her relatives were, and come to a town that we didn't know of so, and moved into a small house.
And she was used to a large,
and we were
at all the comforts.
Having dinner at 5 o'clock, and we had this colored cook, and every day Mary Bell would come. She'd ring the bell, it was 15 minutes in it, you know, and then it got another 15 minutes. So finally we gave up and became Texans and had dinner at noon.
Real true Texans.
Yes.
Well, how many brothers and sisters were you? Just the two?
I had another brother, Harris. Jordan was the older, and then Harris.
And
then I had a sister whom I never saw. He died when she was about 12 years old. Right at the time of the Spanish-American War. That's just before 1900.
Uh-huh.
And then Genevieve.
That's right. So
yes.
There were five of you?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Was Genevieve younger than you?
No,
then?
She was 9 years older.
She was not, you are the youngest.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You are the baby of the family.
Yes, right.
Okay. Well, let's see here. Well, I'll just ask you that now. How is it that you came to Castro? Now, you were just telling us the story.
So we had to do something with the engine, and my brother, which Jordan, was a great leader, and he go down to the main library in New Orleans and take magazines, looking here, he wanted something. And he saw that Brian wanted someone to put in a good power plant. So that they shipped the diesel engine to Brian. And we gave it, you might say, its first electricity and
awesome.
Water that it really worked.
Uh-huh.
The lights were always going out, and the water was always.
Well, how old was JT when he was doing all of this?
In his middle 30s.
Oh. Mm-hmm. And did your dad then just come with you and
yes.
your mother?
And after that, well, when they seized the mill and all, he broke.
Just kind of crushed him.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And he
put him in a depression. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. We moved to Brown in 1912.
Mm-hmm.
And stayed there. And he. Until we sold to the city.
Mm, there.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And then we did.
Well, were you all the family in Brian then?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All of us.
And they put up a small flour mill. Because that was my father's,
favorite thing.
And it, the wall came. And, you had trouble getting flour.
Mm-hmm.
And it
didn't work out.
No. I wasn't old enough to fall.
Maybe you could have helped out a little bit, huh? Well, then, what brought you here to Castroville?
We sold to the city.
Right.
My brother said a city should own its utilities because that is the way the city can get along the best
right.
way. So he had gotten a group of men from Iowa, and they formed a corporation, buying rice plants and different all that. And he owns Sabinow with a Mr. Smiley, and he go through here to get to Sabinow,
Right.
And he saw this place that Mr. Tudan had. It said for sale. And it's just wonderful. He said, I have pictures of what it looked like
before. Uh-huh.
Yes. And he said, that would make a wonderful place. And he told my mother, there's enough room there for our furniture. That always seems to be a problem.
And so, if you were such a big family, too,
yes,
then.
So we moved to Castleville.
Mm-hmm. And bought that from Mr. Perrin. And why was he selling it?
He had quit using the mill. He had done that in a long time. And actually, he had made my brother believe that he owned the water rights, and he put in the water power to make electricity. And when we needed more electricity, and we notified the Medina
co-op,
to please, let some more water down. They said, you don't have to let any water down. We own all the water rights. And so my brother had to see him because he had paid for the property with the idea it had water rights. So he settled out.
And you paid the price for water rights.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Settled out of court and it was got a lot of money back because he sold what he didn't have, really.
Right. Something that wasn't he was trying to sell it probably and get make a profit off of it probably.
But my brother was easy, and the lawyer said, they had a jury, and they said, you made a mistake. We were going to really hit him.
They had it all set, huh?
Yes, and they were so disappointed. Then they said,
Well, Jimmy's brother said that her dad worked for Mr. Perrin at this mill back when it was a flour mill then.
But
she never, was just too little to know anything
about
herself.
All that.
Uh-huh. So that's how, and then the whole family moved from Bryan to Castroville.
Yes. Now, my sister was teaching, and she taught, you know, she'd come home in the summer.
Oh, I see.
And then my brother Harry finally moved into San Antonio.
Uh-huh.
But they, for a while, they lived upstairs at the inn.
Mm.
And we lived down, my brother, my mother, and I lived downstairs. Because there
and
five
your dad
rooms upstairs. My father had
died
in Bryan.
And you were teaching then?
Yes.
Too?
I started to teach soon after we moved here, because I didn't have anything to do.
Uh-huh.
So I taught 2 years in what is now the City Hall, that room.
Gee, that'd be another good one, too. In this middle section here?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, how many teachers were here then?
Three.
Three teachers.
Mrs.
And you were Sadoff.
One?
And what Sadoff was that?
It was one of the superintendents. County superintendent.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. W.N. Sadoff.
W.N.
Great big man. Not to stand.
And he was like the principal then,
yes.
Here.
Uh-huh. Somebody's coming in.
And you said Mr. Sadoff was such a big
man. So then I taught for 2 years, and then I decided I needed a B.A. degree. All I had was a bachelor of music degree, and I knew that wasn't going to do what if I wanted to teach in a high school. So I went to the Range of the Lake for 2 years in 31 and got my B.A. Because I could use my credits from Newton in New Orleans
to go with this. Oh.
So I went, and then I...
Well, there was only an elementary school here then?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that
then
was...
Then I could get a better teacher certificate.
I see.
I think I taught the 6th and 7th grade. And Mr. Lawrence was the superintendent.
Then?
And the high school children, some of them, went to Lytle to school. They were bussed.
Oh. To Lytle.
And we had the elementary here.
And was the Catholic school too here
then? Yes, then it was still going strong.
There was two schools then.
Two.
And what was the name of the Castroville school? What did they call this? Castroville
Public
School.
Yes.
And the other was St. Louis School.
And not too good relationship.
They were still kind of friction.
And mostly the Mexican American sense of
public school.
Public school. And
you said there were three teachers that first time, and Mr. Sadoff. Well, who was the third one?
Lillian Havey, who is now.
Lillian Havey.
Yes.
You're kidding.
Mm-hmm. Then when I came back and taught the 7th grade, I think, that was when Mr. Lawrence
was superintendent.
And
then
we had classes, the study hall was upstairs.
Oh.
And during the Depression, while we were teaching school, they added
these little sections on.
Mm-hmm. So this isn't
the original building. Oh. And what did they add them on for more rooms? It had grown so much.
By then they were going to have, you know,
high school
and high, all in one.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Didn't have enough.
And they used to use the building across the street that the Lutherans now own.
Oh,
That is for the place, really mostly little Mexican. Then the rest of it was used by the first and second grade.
Well, did school? I'm always curious about that. When did school start? Like at 8, 9? You know, they always say they didn't go till so long. Or was it a regular day like they go now?
8:30.
8:30.
Yes. It is rather informal with Mr. Sadoff. I had a dog that would follow me, and the dog would come in and go under my desk, and the children never said a word.
Uh-huh.
And whenever we had a visitor, Sandy would just sit so quiet. And I used to take him out in the yard for exercise at 10:30, you know, Sandy would be the last one out.
Well, that was a nice, relaxed atmosphere. Well, what kind of subjects? The same kind, more or less, that you teach
And I used
now?
To go to the drugstore because Vernon had a radio.
And where was this drugstore?
Where the standby is.
Oh, well, it'd be right across the street from here.
And he would let me bring my class over to hear the music. They had a program once a week of symphony music, Walter Damrosch. And I took my crew over there, and they listened to it.
And that was a big event, yes. I bet. That was really, really something. You didn't have movies to show them at school like they have now. Nothing to work with.
And we used to give them food. You know, we gave them that. We served it upstairs, and we had oatmeal. And we'd say, you could bring your own sugar, because they didn't give us sugar. We had a hose that came from downstairs up and came through that window
to fix the oatmeal.
And I took the oatmeal.
And that was for their dinner or their what?
Yes. And if you didn't eat all of your oatmeal, you didn't get an apple at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
And how much did it cost them to have this oatmeal? That was free. That was free. That went along with the.
Well, it's like now.
Now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's right. Didn't have to pay.
No.
Anything to go to school either, because your taxes were supposed to take care of that. And there was no city then, right? As far as a incorporated city, no.
And so I came over later, one day, this was after, let's see, then I quit for a while. It was hard.
Yeah.
And I came over and I saw what was going on. These children were, little Mexican children, and just being, didn't matter.
Learned or not.
So I decided I'd run for Dean Custy. And I went out to Honda to file my name. And Mr. Schwier was the county superintendent. And he said, you want to run? And I said, yes, I do. I'd like to put my name in. Oh, yes. And he thought a while and looked and got out of bed. He said, well, I don't see how I can keep your name off the ballot in any way, so I guess you'll have to.
That stinker! He was trying to real quick think of something, huh?
Yes. So I ran. And they got out somebody to run against me, a writer, a Mr. Yenner. And he won. They came by 2 votes, and I wouldn't take it. But Ann Davis said she'd be my attorney. So Mr. Yenner then told me that they were going to have 7 trustees because they were going to enlarge the district. And he said, it's only fair that you be on that board. So, but let me tell you, they're planning something. The county board isn't going to appoint you, so you better watch out. So, I went to the courthouse that morning when they were going to have this meeting, and I opened one door after another on the second floor of the courthouse, and I couldn't find this group, you know. Well, finally, I found them. And I told them, now, gentlemen, you gave me your word that I could be appointed on this board, and if I'm not, I don't know what's going to happen.
You see, this is before women were accepted in this kind of a...
So they told me, well, they see. And several of them apologized and said, we want to do what's right for you. So then I went to the meeting of the county board, and they had the power to appoint. And they told me, no, I would not be appointed. And I said, all right, gentlemen. I said, you see in this window, you can see the Hondo Anvil office. If you don't appoint me, I'm leaving here and going right up. One was the chairman of the board. He said, would you step outside just a few minutes? And I stepped outside. It wasn't going long. And they said, come back in. We have just reconsidered, and you are appointed. So I got on the keyboard.
Yes, and that was really something in those days because of that very fact that you were a woman.
Yeah. And so I served a couple of years. Because then they were having all the stuff back and forth.
Back and forth. So you were right in the middle of it all.
Right.
Well, did
when did they build this little school up here by going up the hill where the little school is now?
That was later. Let's see. That was right after the Depression.
Right after the Depression.
It was about that. I quit teaching in 61. And this was back in the 50s.
Well, you were English teacher now for high school here, right?
And you gave one out of how many times in the English class to be playing. That was just more fun.
Well, and people that have talked about it said they just had a ball doing those plays. Had a good time. And this is what, I know I was reading in your book about how you got started with the history of Castroville.
Uh-huh.
You had them writing up essays.
They didn't really know where they came from.
And that's what started you then with backtracking too, huh?
Right. It was a job.
Okay, let's see. And you were councilwoman for the city here?
The first time I got beaten, I ran and I didn't win. Mm-hmm. And it took me 2 years to get over that.
It just broke your heart.
Yes. And then I ran and I came out ahead. I had led the ticket, I guess three. And I got the most votes. And then I served the 6 years. And then I just didn't run.
That was
long enough.
Yes, it gets kind of tiring.
Yes.
And at the same time, weren't you municipal judge then?
Uh-huh.
At the same time?
It was hard for them to find somebody
that was available.
Because you couldn't be any relation to the ones on the council, So they said, go to Hondo and ask them. So we had the next meeting, and Mr. Hope, Tommy Hope, said, well, I went and I found out who they said to appoint. And I said, oh, they did, who?
You were elected.
Well,
that month was probably interesting, though.
Yes,
I only
had court on Saturday morning.
Wasn't any real big.
No.
That was mostly for traffic violations in the town.
Yes.
Things that were in the town.
And fights.
That kind of thing.
Yes.
And you said you retired from English teaching in what year?
61.
In 61. And you haven't taught since then?
No.
You've just been a free lady, huh?
Okay, let's see. What
I just was wondering, what is your favorite thing to do? I out of my own curiosity.
To go to plays.
Oh, that is your favorite thing?
I love drama. If I'd had my way, I would have loved to have been an actor.
Oh. That would have been...
Mm-hmm. But, they thought I was the youngest. I even sat off at
catalog
from a drama school in New York. But I didn't get
there.
So wherever I've gone, I've gotten involved in plays. When we first moved here, that was the first thing I did.
Mm-hmm.
They came and asked me if I'd direct the play that the lady had gotten put out. And we had a dramatic society. And we have to give two performances.
And where did you have these?
We had them in the parish hall.
Oh, on the stage there.
And Herbert Conger would be in the plays and Linda Conger.
And did you charge for people to come see?
Oh,
you did?
Mm-hmm.
What did you charge them?
I think they paid 75 cents.
That's a lot for them, really.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd have a crowd.
Packed.
And did you have it at night?
Or at night.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Well, wouldn't that have been something if we had a tape recorder then to get some of those? Oh, that would be golden. Oh, gee. Well, what do you think of Castroville now that you've been here? For how many years have you been here?
Since 1927.
And this is 78. Oh, gee, what is that? That's how the principal. 78, and that's 27, you say?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is 51 years.
Yeah.
You could almost call this home, huh?
Yeah.
For 51 years.
It doesn't seem that long, though, because I did so many different things.
Well, you've had a very exciting life. Not a dull minute, huh?
No, not really.
Haven't ever been bored. And you're also a columnist now at the Bulletin.
Yes.
Put out that paper, little article every week.
Well, it kind of keeps you on your toes.
Keeps your mind moving.
Yes.
And just how to spell words.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, when I opened the Inn, that was in 42.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you did not have that opened up for the public when you first came.
No, not strictly your room upstairs. Uh-huh. We lived downstairs, and the lower house where I live now was it had been used as a cotton warehouse. And so during the war, this cute little lady came and said, "My husband wants to live in Castleville. Can't you find a house for us?" And just laughingly, I said, "Well, the only thing I have is that old wreck down below." And she said, "Oh." And I said, "I'm sorry." And she left. And in about, maybe not even a half an hour, here she was back. She said, I turned around and came back because I didn't want to tell my husband I can't find a home. She said, "I have 10 boys, and they'll help." And they were at the top. But we did get, I had one carpenter and his helper, little Gerloff and Schirhofer. And we had to put in petitions, we had to put in the plumbing, electricity, everything. But we made it into a livable place. And they moved in.
And that was your first?
Savage. And we still lived at the inn. So then, one night, they phoned from Youngman's, had a filling station where the beauty shop is. And they said, "Oh, Miss Ruth, we know you have that room up there." I had the room furnished. They're such a nice couple with a little boy, and they're so tired. "Don't you think you could just let them spend the night?" My brother used to and I persuaded him. And that started the end.
And that was your first overnight time. And that was in 1942? Did you say? Oh, and then you started advertising it or not?
Not too much, no.
Just people that were coming through.
And then I got $1.50 a night.
Oh my gosh, can you imagine?
That I ran in the Valley paper. I said, "Why drive into San Antonio? Stop it." And we named it Landmark Inn. And then, see, all during the war, I had cadet wives. And I had it just like a dormitory. I let two girls stay in the room. And then every weekend they would pray. And one girl would go to San Antonio with her husband. And the other girl would stay there and her husband would come. That was the rule. If you took the room, you knew you had to do that.
I see.
I still hear from some of them.
About that. That was really a trade-off type of
nice
for them, too. And that was
New
York, too.
In the 40s.
In the 40s.
And then I kept on having it. Then I rented it a few times, the whole work. But that
didn't work out.
Not too satisfactory. So I had that blackboard on the wall as you come in. And I used to use that so I wouldn't have to go down there at night. If somebody called for a room, I would say, "All right, I'm going to give you room 3. It will be open and the light will be on, and you just go up the steps."
He gave him a little message right there.
And so then they come, they give the message
and go up.
And once, not too long ago, we had a call from Mexico, and they wanted a room for 2 men. Well, I assumed that they were Mexican. So I worked so hard to say all of that in Spanish. I said the directions would be on the blackboard. And lo and behold, the next morning when they appeared and I met them, they were from England.
They were visiting in Mexico and wanted to...
They were working at for a big English firm, and they were on vacation. But it was really funny that I thought
that they were... Well, what happened to your brother Harry then? He moved to San Antonio later before you started.
And he has his son, and he died before my other brother. They were only 22 months
apart.
And he kind of continued what my father had done. Sold flour and sugar and things like that.
And he had that kind of a...
In Korea.
In Korea. So then that was All right, now we're talking about the landmark, and you started, when did you start doing some history on that, trying to figure out, when did you get so involved with the landmark and with its restoration and all of this kind of?
Well, after my brother passed away, J.T., I thought, well, this thing is too big for me to handle. I knew the dam needed repairs, and I knew the tunnel that runs from the dam to the mill is the rock line tunnel. Well, I knew that needed repairs. So I tried to get HUD to give me some money.
Yes, I've heard of that.
And the man came down, and I know it was raining, and I had a red same umbrella I had, and I walked around, all down there to show it to me. He said, oh, well, we can't do anything for you until you get on the National Register. So I said, well,
get on the National Register.
So I got on the National Register, and I let him know. Well, he said, that's just the beginning. But then, Wayne Bell is an architect in Austin, and he has a class at the university, and he'd always bring his students down to show them the structure of the dam and the mill, you know. And I would usually have donuts and coffee for them. So I decided, I said, Wayne, do you think if I give it to Austin Wildlife, they'd take it? I'm sure they would. I said, well, let's try. Because if I had tried to get them to buy it, I don't think I would have succeeded. And so I made a deal. So I gave it to them and kept the house that I live in is my life estate.
I see.
And I'm to always have ingress and egress to it.
Well, that worked out just great.
And they pay the tax.
And it is something then that you wouldn't have to worry about someone ever tearing down,
they'll knock that thing down.
You know, it's your love,
Across the street, where Mr. Terry's was, that used to be a pity hall. And oh, that word you say, it was so noisy for the people that stayed there, you know. So one day, Fabian Zibala, who was on me for years, said, oh, you see, they're moving the two pages out. I said, oh, that's Terry Fabian. So I rushed to the phone and phoned Mr. Edgar, the owner. And I said, Mr. Edgar, your tenants are moving out. I'd like to rent the pool hall. What would you do with it? And I said, well, I don't know yet, but I'll
at least it'll be quiet.
Yes. So I rented it. And then I thought, well, that's not too smart. I might have a pool hall
again.
So I bought it from
him.
And then sold part of it to shop for parking.
Oh, that was a whole big piece of land that was his, too. I see.
And then I kept the other and rented it to Mr. Craig's son first, and then Mr. Craig bought it.
And that was when it was big, then you were just renting to them then? And you say they're working on that, too, right now?
Yes. You gave
that part to the Park of Wildlife also?
No. I didn't. I sold them that.
You sold them that part, huh? You did get some. I see.
Yeah.
Well, see, that's the whole thing. You're fearful of what another owner would have done with it, you know, and
it
is such a historical. That would really
be. Might have had some old kind of honky tonk, you know.
That's the whole thing.
So
that was a smart
move.
A smart move there. So right now it's just in the waiting line,
to be working on it. They have now on that famous blackboard, park development.
Well, at least they're leaving your famous blackboard, huh? They didn't remove it, huh?
No.
Well, are you going to be able to give them advice as to what things are important or not important, as to what they're tearing up or redoing?
They
kind of know?
They did a lot of research.
Oh, they did?
Oh, yes. I have a book about that, too. They interviewed people and things like that. They really have done
a lot of work on it.
Now, right now, the furniture that needs repairing, that I sold them that, has gone to the penitentiary at Huntsville, where they have trained the men to repair furniture. And a big truck came one day and zoomed out the things went. Now, the things that were in good condition and didn't need any repair, they've gone to a big warehouse in Austin. And they have to stay there until the end.
Well, was this some of the furniture that you brought from New Orleans?
Not really.
But
New Orleans furniture I kept at the end.
It's yourself. I see. And this was
These were beds and bureaus
and that kind of. Well, that the Landmark Inn was built. Do you know what year? About.
Yes, the lower floor was built about 1846.
Long way after they came.
By a Cesar Munoz.
And how would you spell that?
Just like a Caesar, C-A-E-S-A-R, and M-O-N-O-D.
Oh, okay.
And then he sold it to Vance in 1855.
About like that.
And Vance then built the lower house where we live. For his residence.
Oh.
And the basement is where he stored I guess things that he had for his, because they served meals at the home. And I don't know what else.
That was his grocery supply, more or less. Mm-hmm. And that was the post office then, too?
Yes, the post office is up above in the end building, that first big room. And you can still see the slot in the doorway.
Well, he did not have the meal then.
No,
Vance did not. He strictly had it at a hotel or an inn.
Right.
And it was after.
And then, I'm not too sure of the date on
when that came into somewhere in between there.
But that was built by a half.
The mill was?
Yeah, it wasn't part of the original piece.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
Quintal and half
built the mill.
And they built that tunnel that runs from the mill all the way to the
other.
To the dam.
You
can walk on.
And who built the dam?
Quintal and Hay.
And they built the dam also. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then Coran bought it from Vance. Why did Vance, Vance wanted to sell it?
I think he owed money and
he just needed to.
Yeah, and I think Coran just bought it to get his money back. And then it just got idle.
After Coran bought it.
Yes, but Coran never lived there. He lived in this White House where the Arbor shop.
Oh, the Jordan House?
Yes. That was Coran's residence.
Yeah, it was a beautiful
house.
Beautiful. Oh, and that's where he lived. And then.
And when we bought, my brother bought the. The inn, that building. It looked.
And so Coran never lived at the inn at all then.
He used to rent the upper floor.
Oh.
Because that was divided, into small rooms. Uh-huh. And the lower floor, it wasn't practical, I guess.
Yeah.
And a lot of different people had rented it. The
upper stairs part. Uh-huh. And then when your brother came by, he saw it, and it was just in Neil and Lloyd.
Yes. And the gallery was gone. So that you couldn't use it except for a family place, because you opened the door to room 3, and then to get to 2, you had to go through 3, and to get to 1, you had to go through 2, and then you turn this way, and to get in 4 and 5, you had to go through a little hall. Now that you couldn't have that. So when I was teaching here, and they started to have a high school, I asked the principal because they didn't think I'd be so good. So it made me mad, and I quit. And I took my money out of the teacher's savings, and I bought the lumber and hired the carpenter and paid for it myself for the gallery to be put back. And I had hardly.
And what year was that?
That's in the 40s.
That was in the 40s also.
About 23. When I did, the wall came, and I was ready for a hotel.
Boy, you did it just in time then.
It really was remarkable.
That you had timed it so well, huh? Yeah. Well.